This is Robert Cappuccio. Welcome to Transformation Unplugged, where we challenge conventional thinking and explore authentic strategies and insights around personal transformation. Our commitment to you is to connect you with some of the world's leading experts in health, fitness, and behavior change, separating fact from fallacy. To be unplugged means deciding to be unrestrained by the beliefs, expectation, and assumption of others. To make the declaration that only you can determine for yourself what the best version of you looks like based on what you authentically want and value most. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to Transformation Unplugged. This is Bobby Cappuccio. Our guest today is Eric Casimiri. I first met Eric a couple of decades ago when he joined my fitness team as a trainer, and I quickly realized that he was positioned to become one of my top performing trainers very early on in his career. His energy, his focus, ability to engage and execute impressed me. At one of our team meetings, and I'm going to let Eric tell the story, but let me just say that a series of events planted the seeds that grew into one of the biggest success stories in the fitness business. It was in that meeting that Eric's journey to become the founder of Retro Fitness Chains began. Today, he's not only the founder of one of the most successful health club franchises in the United States, but he starred on A&E's Save It or Sell It, the TV series Undercover Boss, and he has the unique down-to-earth ability to share his lessons of success, the challenges that you're going to face along the way, and why he believes that the journey is just as rewarding as the destination. I know you're going to get a lot out of this episode, so let me just leave you and say, enjoy it. I think it would be an understatement to say I'm pretty excited about having you on today, Eric. We go back how many years exactly?
Oh my gosh, Bobby. Now you're aging and dating us both. We met back in 1995 into 96. That's when I returned back from my wonderful dropping out of Arizona State University. And my father told me I need to go get a job. And he pointed to the just recently made the Gold's Gym in Staten Island, New York, which has since changed names, as you know.
It's New York.
And we met there. And I came and I worked for you in the training department back in 95 or 96.
Wow. Yeah. No wonder I stopped getting carded at bars. Thanks for that. it's like I went in with my wife the other day. We were at one of our locals. And like the bartender, he's new. He's one of the few that doesn't know us there. He's like, oh yeah, I need to see ID. I got so angry. I was like, why are you carding her? But like, no second guesses whatsoever. I'm fine. Never has to see my ID. Anyway.
So a polite carding would have been nice.
It would have been like a courtesy carding. Thanks.
Right. Courtesy carding. Let's name it that. Courtesy carding.
So when we first met, you know, you were telling me a story. I want to ask you about this because I got a lot out of this. And we were in a meeting. I think I was giving it. Sorry about that. That must have been torture. And you had gone home that night and something serendipitous happened. And tell us where you first got the idea to build Retro.
So I apologize up front if I get a little long-winded because this story I enjoy so much in telling because it was such an inspirational and pivotal point in my entire life. And I always like to talk about pivotal points to whether it's employees or friends or family or my kids, but that was certainly one of them. And serendipitous is probably the best word you could use for it.
Go for it. Because this story is amazing.
So I could still recall the day. I'll back it up to when I was in that seminar. Right. So, and I call it a seminar because, you know, that was our training. They were like seminars, they were mini seminars and you were up there and we were talking about, you know, selling personal training, right? I mean, that was what it was. And how do we connect with our clients? And you were actually using techniques that you had learned, from the same person I'm about to talk about. So, and it was clear and evident, but it wasn't clear and evident at the time it was happening because I was enjoying it. I was on the other end of it, learning from it because these were great tools. So I get home that night after that educational informal seminar, you know, about how do we, you know, improve our experience with our members and our clients. And I was, and I loved it because I, you know, as you know, I was a fitness enthusiast and I was passionate about that same experience happening. So I get home that night, I'm still living in my dad's house and, you know, I'm kind of misdirection, misguided a little bit. I'm, you know, I know what I want to do. Don't know how I'm going to do it. Kind of on a road with no map, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that night, you know, I'm still a night off, right? So people ask me, when do you get most of your work done? I get my best and most intense work done at probably 1 or 2 a.m. So it was one of those nights where I was, you know, laying up in bed and I was flipping through the TV channels, and you know, there was no DVR, TiVo, or Netflix back then, right? So you were kind of forced to watch what was ever on at that crazy hour.
And, just a remote control and Kurt Cobain back then, yeah.
Yeah,
there you go. That's all we had.
And some of our listeners may not even recognize or even know what this is. I mean, depending, again, I'm dating myself, but you know, there were infomercials on it, and infomercials were so incredible. And they were such a great sales tool. And at the time, who today is a well-known and well-respected speaker. He doesn't even like to be called a motivator because he really changed his life. But you know, he was known then as tagged as a motivational speaker, but it was Anthony Robbins. And he was promoting his 30-day personal power. And I had just clicked into this infomercial and it caught me. It caught me because his voice is riveting, right? I mean, he's captivating to listen to. And I'm like, wow, who is this crazy guy? This, you know, yelling and babbling. He's got all these third party references of these success stories of people that did this 30-day personal power. And as I'm listening and watching, I'm like, holy crap. I'm like, Bobby was doing some of this just earlier this afternoon. He was talking about some of the same stuff. I'm like, I wonder if this guy be the guy he's talking about. So what I do is I pick up the telephone and I dial that number and I order the 30-day personal power. I said, what do I got to lose? It was like $299. And I'm like, all right, well, if I'm going to spend $299 on something, it may as well be an investment in me. And that was my first real investment in myself and my furthering my education, you know, post dropping out of college. And it was probably the most influential phone call that I made, coming off of, had I not had the secondary reference of you, Bobby, earlier giving that talk and using those techniques, I probably wouldn't have had as much enthusiasm to dial the number, because I would have just thought like, yeah, maybe I would have kept flipping the channels. But because it resonated at the moment, I made the call. You know, so pivotal point number one, boom, I make that phone call. And, you know, rush delivery, paid the extra, whatever it was. I probably did, because you know how they get you at the end for the extra thing or whatever. So I get the delivery, and it wasn't cassette. It was right like when CDs were getting real popular. So I think the cassette version, I had something else came in the cassette version. I don't even know if people don't even know what a cassette is. If you don't, God, please Google that. But
it's where mixtapes.
The CDs are, yeah, yeah, right, mixtapes, exactly. So the CDs arrived, and the audio CDs arrived, and I had started what we now today call, right, the university on wheels. Like I would listen to it, mm-hmm, either in the car, and then the actionable items. Like I would literally either pull over on the side of the road and write in this journal, or I would re-listen to the CD when I was doing cardio. So I would get on a treadmill in the morning at the house and I'd pop it into the boombox CD player and I would blast it while I was doing it. And then when there's always the call to action. Right? You know, Tony Robbins, he's always making and I say this a lot, you know, think a thought, take an action. You know, whenever you hear something, you got to take an action. That's really an important discipline. I think if you're going to be successful, and discipline number one is when you feel something, go do something toward that feeling. So that's absolutely something that is now innate in me, and I do it all the time. And so much to fall for, my wife gets mad at me because it affects my ADD, right? Like I think of something, I just go start doing something. And she's like, wait, we were just at a conversation at dinner and you're like walking away or getting up. Or like it's that bad sometimes for me. So that being said, I took the CD program very, very seriously, and I implemented so many. In fact, I still have that very, very same journal. And if you look through the goals, and they make you set these long-term and short-term goals, if you look through some of them, I have crossed off almost all of them that I set out to achieve. This is what, 22, 23 years ago? And it's kind of crazy when you think about it. And I achieved them, most of them, within the first 5 to 10 years. So let's rewind, and then we'll fast forward. So rewind back to getting that, going back to work the next day, really motivated, right? Getting back into the gym with you guys and getting to work. And I was in, you know, I performed fairly well at that job. I think we would agree, because I loved it, right? I mean, I think I followed the cues.
Well, you took a few roles and you performed really well in all of them. You were also in sales, yeah, for a while. So you were learning, mm-hmm, all, yeah, aspects of the business. That's the thing that impressed me about you when we met, is how many roles you were willing to jump into and completely go after it.
Yeah, I think I was the first version of a hybrid employee that they saw there, because I loved doing the training department and selling in the sales. But then because I was selling so much in the training department, because I really was passionate about people getting what they needed, they said, you need to come into membership sales. And I remember when Sue asked me to come into membership sales, I wonder how the hell Sue's doing, by the way. And it was great. It was a great experience. I learned even more. And that's when I met Casey Conrad, and I got to watch her for the first time and then read her book. And so many more other great, wonderful people in our industry that I was fortunate enough to, that I'd never met prior. And while this is all happening, my job's still doing my 30-day personal power and taking actions. And that truly, you know, how divine it was. That led me to the path of where we are today, because what happened is I wasn't, you know, they say opportunity is always there, but the luckiest people are the ones that are taking advantage of the opportunity because they're paying attention. So I was paying attention for opportunity at that point in time. And that's when the opportunity to open my first gym came across my telephone, right? I got a phone call and someone said, hey, there's this guy. He's looking for someone who's really got the fitness side of the business. He's got a location that's in New Jersey. And, you know, he knows you've been in and out of working in gyms your whole late teens, early 20s. I mean, that's all I really did. I mean, I worked, that's the only job I really ever held down was working in the gyms. And that opportunity was the beginning of everything. And it was my first chance. And then I had to raise the money that I needed to get in there. And that's where, you know, the story of how I went to my dad.
That was World's Gym, right?
That was a powerhouse gym back then.
That was powerhouse. Oh, okay.
It was a powerhouse gym. Yep.
Was that the one that I used to go down to?
It was down in Brick, New Jersey. Yeah, it was down the shore.
Okay. And your partner was Joe.
Yes, that was my first partner. And it was a great opportunity. And the wonderful thing about the early years is I always tell people is if you get into a market earlier than most, and you're geographically in the right, you know, you make the right choice there. I call it geographic success. You make the right choice. You're on the right corner at the right time. You can make a lot of mistakes. I mean, a lot. And still survive. And if you don't let your ego get in your way and you realize that it wasn't because of you, it was just because of where you were, that helps you to grow. So we made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of mistakes. I learned so much. And I was humble enough to become a student and an ongoing student constantly. So part of my regimen back then was I would spend a good portion of 2 days a week and thank goodness they're still around, Barnes & Noble. And I still have such a soft spot for Barnes & Noble because I would go in there and I would read for free, right? Because I didn't have to buy the books if I stayed there. So I would bring a notebook with me. And, you know, when you're starting a business, you have no money. So, you know, I mean, in the real world, you start a business, like you don't have millions of dollars around you when you open, especially your first gym. Usually you are working for free and the business is, you're resuscitating the business on a daily basis until the business can survive on its own. So, you know, at my then fiance, my girlfriend, Kim, and now my wife, she was really supporting, you know, us to keep a roof over our head, because she had a great job when she came here from Arizona. So she was kind of supporting that endeavor in the beginning as we were taking, I mean, literally, like, I think our first paychecks were $100. And that was when we actually started taking, the first paychecks were zero. Like, there was no paycheck. Mm-hmm. But the first one, I think, was
$100.
Like
$100. Must have been pretty exciting. Like, holy shit, I could buy
it. It was. I was like, hold on. I was able to pay for gas. It was great. It was wonderful. I could fill my car with gas to get to my business. It was awesome. But that's how it really begins. I mean, people don't understand like how it starts for a lot of beginners. And that's everything. I mean, that's in fitness too. Like, everyone starts somewhere and it's usually not the ideal spot. There's never the ideal spot to start, but you have to start. That's in fitness. That's in life. That's in business. I mean, it's really important to understand that. And I was able to wrap myself around, just keep looking forward, and you just got to, you know, you keep pushing. But it only came from a lot of really good advice. And now, sparking from the 30-day personal power, which I did, which was an outstanding program, I then took it a step further, and I started to go to the seminars. So I had not just Tony Robbins, I had done Unleash the Power Within. And since then, now I do his Business Mastery, which I think is outstanding. I've done Business Mastery 3 times. It's a 4-day immersion course, which is awesome. And this isn't a commercial for Tony Robbins, but I am a great third-party validator. I will say I learned a lot. You know, even being one of the more successful people that stands in the room at those seminars, I still learn every time, because he brings really, really intelligent people to help and facilitate your growth. But I also started going to Zig Ziglar, God rest his soul. I went to see Zig. I went out to Arizona. I saw Robert Kiyosaki. You know, he wrote Rich Dad Poor Dad and several other great books. But I became a student, and then I really became and I hate to say these, go around and tour and be like a seminar junkie, but I really was fascinated with some of the best seminars that I could, and I would listen constantly to these speakers. And I would always say, you're mining for the diamonds, you know, a nugget here and there. So I would always grab a nugget here and there. So going back to your initial question, how it got started, you know, when I had that first opportunity, it was just looking at that opportunity as a springboard, and that, you know, I could have just stopped at the first gym and been like, oh, this is great. You know, we're successful. We've got thousands of members now in this one location and it's doing well. But I had this hunger, this fire in my belly. And I don't know, you know, I think it was part of it was, it's always been there, but then it was just fueled by when you read about what you're really capable of doing and how time is a variable that you really can't put a dollar amount on or any real valuation on. I was like, I only have so much time, this finite amount of time in this lifespan. How much more can I do? How many more people can I touch? How many more people are involved with? How much more can I experience? So I had this yearning for growth, and I still have it, obviously, right? I mean, I think we've done a pretty good job. I mean, Retro Fitness has been a great company. We're over $150 million a year in sales, you know, system wide.
Yeah, I'd say most people really think,
yeah, I think most people, but Bobby, you know, I look at it like, wow, I got a ways to go. And I do that on purpose. Not that I'm not thankful and have great gratitude for the success we've completed, but I want to grow. And I think growth is so important. And even my own fitness level, I mean, I'm about to be 45 years old this year. And I would tell you, I probably train harder and better than we did back in the day at that Gold's Gym in Staten Island. I mean, I'm just in much better shape. And I train hard and I say, wow, look at how much you've got, how much finer you've gotten. Like, we refer to wine with it, right? But I feel like my body's gotten better and more fine tuned because I've strived to get that growth out of myself.
I just want to stop you right there because so far, and forgive me for cutting in here, but there's a few lessons that I've gotten out of this already. And I just want to recap on them because they're really important. And let's go all the way back to the beginning for 1 second and then pick up right where you left off. You know, you were sitting there in the same exact workshop as a room full of other trainers. All of them heard me talk about this program I was on. All of them heard my recommendations. But there was only one person who was paying attention and took action. So you were like really aware in your environment. You weren't just attending, you were listening. Because if you weren't listening, you would have never made that connection at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning where this like gigantic inspiring guy comes on. I mean, he's half inspirational, half terrifying, just the sheer size of him. Like if I was in a live seminar front row and he yelled at me, I would do whatever he said. But you notice, hey, there's a pattern here. Somebody said something earlier today, and now this has shown up again. Let me take action. You didn't know exactly what you were getting yourself into. You didn't know if you'd hate the 30-day program. You didn't even know, like, okay, am I going to take it out of the box or whatever, but I'm going to order it. And then once you did that, you started cultivating a habit between thought and immediate action. And you know, it's funny because a lot of times it's not just when we have a positive thought. I'm not a big fan of the words positive and negative, but let's just use that just as a placeholder. It's not just a positive thought. It could be a negative thought. It could be an anxiety-ridden thought. It could be a thought that is attempting to derail you from your course, from your current path. As long as you take action, a lot of times just getting into momentum at the very least mitigates that. And at the very best takes a positive thought and starts to amplify it and bring that into tangible fruition. So you have that paying attention, being open, taking action, and conditioning the habit of once you have a thought, take action immediately. And that's so powerful because another thing that I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm misrepresenting anything you just said, is you didn't know exactly what you were doing in the 30 day. You didn't even know exactly where you wanted to go when you opened up your first business. You were engaged in the process and that vision started to crystallize and evolve over time. So many people are like, oh my God, I got to start an exercise program. I got to get the right kit. And I don't know exactly what to do. What do I eat? And they have all these questions. And I know me and Eric have heard this a lot of times. Well, what do I do if I'm just not motivated? What if I don't know what motivates me? And for me, motivation, it pales in comparison to curiosity and frustration. Like, what are you curious about? What in your life or what do you see in other people's lives that frustrate you? Because if you can just stay in the process, you get motivated as you start to progress and as you start to evolve. One of the things that you also said that stuck with me is learning. You kept yourself in an environment conducive to growing. And I think a lot of times people think, well, when I get to the end, oh man, when I lose that 10, 20 pounds, I'm going to be really happy. No, you're probably going to be unfulfilled if it doesn't link to how that supports a deeper value. But where you're really going to be on fire is when you focus on the process. And you know when you get there, not to put a cliche on it, but when going to the gym shifts between something I have to do and something I get to do, at that point, exercise isn't something I do. It's quintessentially who I am. It's not like, oh man, I can't wait till I lose that percent body fat. No, I can't wait till I get into the gym because that's the best part of my day. And when the payoff is built into the process, well then the outcome is unavoidable. That's where the result is going to take care of itself. And when I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, okay, behavior. And then after you identify a behavior that you're going to engage in, you know, step number two is environment. How do I restructure my environment in a way that supports those behaviors? How do I challenge that? How do I even deepen my level of commitment? And where's the reward? Is there, and not everything you do, not every day you get up to go to the gym, not every day you're in your business or every role in your business, you're going to enjoy that. There's certain things you just have to do. But is the essence of what you're doing enjoyable? So people are out there looking for the right exercise program. You know, we can debate all day long on the science between the right exercise program versus something that lacks efficacy. Is what you're doing sustainable? Mm-hmm. And what's not enjoyable is usually not sustainable.
That's very true. That last point is especially true.
Can I ask you a question? Like just on the tail end of that, because you also said something about ego. Now, and you didn't, it was interesting how you framed this. You said, if I have a massive success in my business, don't let your ego get in the way. You said, if I make a mistake and I don't let ego get in my way, no, it wasn't your fault. It was just where you are. A lot of times people think about ego as being this inflated sense of self. Talk about ego a little bit, about what you meant by that. How does ego get in the way and sabotage us when we're experiencing failures?
So I think ego is such an important balance, especially in the leadership role. So, and in life, I mean, you need that to understand that it's important to have confidence and the ability to believe in yourself. That is critical. But where ego becomes challenging, right, is when you think that you can do no wrong, and when wrong, and inevitably we all make mistakes, and when those happen, it's how you manage those, and ego can challenge how you manage those mistakes. That's why, you know, balancing being humble with your ego is important, because as a leader, you have to have some bravado. That bravado doesn't mean you have to be a jackass, right? I mean, it doesn't mean you have to be overzealous. It just means you have to believe in yourself to the point that you understand what you're trying to achieve. And then you get after it. You have to be able to get after it. And part of it needs to do that. You have to believe, I can do this. I can do that. Of course I can. Well, he did that. Why not me? And once you have asked the why not me question, that's important. And not, why not me? Not like, hey, I deserve this, but why not me? Why can't I go out and do this myself? Why can't I go do that? Not why not me? I'm entitled, not in an entitlement sense. I don't want that to be misunderstood. But then balancing that against being humble when you hit that wall, you hit that bump in the road, or, you know, that crushing blow comes, that you're able to dust yourself off and say, okay, I still got what it takes. Let me get back in there. And sometimes getting back in there means, let me keep learning. Maybe I need to study a little bit more about this. Maybe I need to understand a little more. I need to dig another layer deeper, you know, and understand what I'm trying to achieve here. So balancing ego versus being humble when things don't happen, and I think that's how you define happiness, right? Your expectations versus reality. So you can't, you have to balance that. It's really, really important. Now, for me, I was able to have enough of each, you know, sometimes a little more on one side than the other, but it's worked for me. And you have to know, and I'd be able to identify what's working for you and what's not, and then change correct course when it's really not going the right way. And ego will prevent you from doing that if in fact it's if you're you have too much of it in the wrong place. It's displaced.
Do you know who Chuck Wolf is? The speaker, he speaks on like functional biomechanics and movement. Have you heard of him?
I've heard of him. I probably have read a million articles with that have his author, but I don't know him personally, and I couldn't, if you put him in a lineup, I wouldn't be able to pick him out.
Well, he's really an interesting guy. We've been friends for a long time, and he's a brilliant educator. We were doing a seminar series through the East Coast of Australia, and we got down to Melbourne, and he was in front of the room, and you know, I love listening to him, but I heard the same exact seminar 6 times already in the span of 10 days. So I was kind of just like chatting to his wife and ignoring him. And it comes out that she used to be a very successful stage performer. Now, the performing arts is something I've always been really curious and really passionate about. I said, well, what's the difference? I said, because so many people that do well in the performing arts, if say, well, how'd you get there? They'll tell you, well, I worked really hard. Like, no shit. Like, everybody who's gotten anywhere has worked really hard. But if, like, hard work by itself were, like, the key to success, like, construction workers, they'd be the most successful guys financially in the world because they work really, really hard. I said, well, what else is it? Because, you know, people talk about talent. Everyone has talent who's in that space. What do you think makes the difference between someone who almost makes it and someone who is just something special? You have to experience them on stage. And she said, well, the very best performers I've ever worked with are the people who have this unrelenting ego and extreme amounts of humility in the same exact person. They're both at the very same time, all the time. I was like, wow, that's amazing. And a couple of months ago, I was in a workshop in London, and I'm taking this guy's class, and I think he's a brilliant coach. And you know, he's worked with Steve Carell and Steve Colbert, so he's worked with all the very best Steves, basically. And there was one scene where I was asked to do something. And then as I started doing it, I stopped. I was like, oh, you know what? So I totally messed that up. That was my fault. And he yells at me. He's like, stop letting your ego get in the way of the room. I was like, how am I letting my ego get in the way? I just took total responsibility. He said, no, you're assuming that somehow you and your performance is the most important thing in the room right now. Whether you think you just crushed it or whether you think you just failed, you're putting yourself in the center. What's really more important is what are you trying to accomplish and how do you serve the rest of the people in this scene that you're with right now? You're not an important part of the equation. So stop playing that game and get back into scene. I was like, you know what? This guy's absolutely right. You know, it's not only when we're like, oh, I'm amazing. It's like, oh, I failed. I suck. You're becoming self-obsessed with yourself as part of the equation or a personality trait rather than the process. Or who or what gets positively impacted when you're just in a state of flow?
That's interesting. Yeah, I would have to tell you that makes a lot of sense.
So what would be your rules for success? Like if you were to give Eric Cassaberry's top 3 rules for success in anything in life, what would they be?
You know, the cliche of, you know, do something you love and you never work a day in your life. You have to always... In my opinion, when you're, whether it's business or yourself, your personal benefit, your personal success, I think you have to really be passionate. And I say the word passionate, I'm enthusiastic, motivated, call it what you want, to get started. But discipline is what gets you finished. So, you know, Jocko Willink wrote a great book, you know, and discipline is freedom. And it's, you know, and it, there's so many interesting facets of that statement. You know, you really need to understand that being disciplined with yourself is a critical element to success. So I am more disciplined with me about what I do every day, how I do it, than anyone else could be, nor could I be to someone else. And it's because I know how much abuse I can take for myself, and I know what my thresholds are because I'm very self-aware. So self-awareness is important. understand that motivation and passion is important to get you started. So you want to go, that will take you in the direction, but discipline will keep you going in the direction, because along the way, as much as you love something or care about something, you know, look at marriage, look at your children, look at your sibling. You know, you could love someone, but it's going to take a continued effort to maintain harmony, right? I mean, it doesn't just always, it's not just, you know, rainbows and unicorns every day. So it's, and that's important to understand. And it's, and that's okay. That's okay. Like, that's reality. You have to be okay with that. And discipline lets you be okay with it. You know, understanding, and the discipline becomes so much easier as you do it. It is truly like a flexing muscle in your brain. Like, you really have to understand, like, the more you discipline yourself to do things or not do things, the better and stronger you become. It's just
as it
amazing
becomes an
automated, that,
ingrained habit pattern.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the process that happens. And once you experience it, the success of that one time, you get sold on it. So it's easy for you to apply it in so many other places. So whether you have success from discipline in fitness, or success and discipline in eating well, or success and discipline from work because you know how to project manage, once you feel that, you just can apply the same process to every other aspect of your life. And if you can and figure out the steps to the discipline, you win. So it's important to understand, you know, so, you know, it's hard for me to put into a basket of 1, 2, 3, or 5 things, because there's a few things that layer off of what I'm saying. But the first and most important is understanding what you really want to be or do. And then when you do, how passionate can you be about that? And then once you figure that all out, and there's a couple of really fun things you could do for yourself. And I just read this one. I think it was recommended by, in one of the books I was reading, David Asprey's Game Changers. And one of the guys he profiles in his podcast, and in his book, he talks about it. And he says, you know, imagine yourself, and here's a really cool one. Like, if you take yourself and go 20 years from now, not most people say, oh, go 10 years out or 5 years out, or set a 1 year goal, these short-term, just go 20 years out. And then, And think about this for a second. And we could do this little drill right now if you'd like. And go 20 years out. Who are you with? Why are you with them? Where are you? And of the people that you're with, why do they want to be with you? And you ask these questions, because think about 20 years ago. I mean, 20 years ago, Bobby, I was just kind of finishing up my days with you. When you think about that, right? I mean, that's kind of crazy. So I just opened my first gym. I didn't have any kids. I wasn't even married yet. I'm not married for another 3 months. I mean, my life was radically different. So if you can go all the way out to there and look at yourself, that will help define some really interesting things about what you want and who you want to be. If you go that far out by going that far back, if you're old enough to go that far back, if you're not, just imagine, wow, if you're 23, let's just, you were 3 years old, right? Think of all the things that happened in your last 20 years. Then go forward 20 years to help you do this process. It's an interesting one because it'll help set your directionally. I mean, people are, sometimes the problem is the compass. You don't know what your compass is. Not just your moral compass. I call it your general compass. Like, what direction do you want to go? You have to figure that out. And even if you're a really disciplined and a passionate person, if you don't have a direction, you may run in circles really fast and really hard, but you go nowhere.
How did you figure that out? Because that is such a common question. If I was about to do another webinar right now, instead of doing this podcast, and actually right after this, I am doing a webinar, but if it was around coaching and any of the areas that we're talking about, I can almost guess somebody's going to get on and go, but what if I don't know what I'm passionate about? What if I don't know what my vision is? What would be your advice? Like, what was the process for you?
But first of all, it's okay. Most people don't. And it may change, because in 20 years from now, that's why you asked a 20-year question.
Yes.
It might be so different than who you are today. And it should be, because you've grown, you've changed. You know, what I was passionate about in my journal from my personal power from 1995 is so much different than it is today, because I've hit so many mile markers. What do? I close the book and just, you know, dig my grave and go lay in it right now? No, I what's the next goal? What's the next move? You know, it's kind of like leveling up in a video game, or it's kind of like hitting a personal best in the gym. Now what? Well, you gotta ask the question, now what, often. And you gotta ask the question, the power of why, right? Tony talks about that, but the power of why. If you constantly ask yourself why do I want this, and you keep asking why about the last answer you gave, you'll get to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a process. But most people don't want to take the time to do it. A, because maybe you're afraid to do it. And that's okay. Looking in the mirror sometimes is hard the first time. You're going to have a blemish or two, but you do it, and you can find the blemishes and say, okay, now let's figure out, you know, who am I? You know, asking that question is really interesting. It doesn't have to mean you have to be all, you know, like in this like Zen mode, and you got to have candles burning and incense in the background. This is like a pretty interesting thing to do and do it often. Like, why do I want to do that? Is that really going to help me get to what I feel my ultimate goal is, my ultimate purpose is? And it doesn't have to be this global thing that is, you know, perfect in the eyes of any person that may read it on the headline of the newspaper. It's got to be right for you. You know, and that, because you got, it's happy. It's, what makes you happy? What's going to make you smile? What made you feel good? You know, that's
and
why
it is about paying attention there. Because one of the things that you did early on is you experimented with stuff. Like, let me go in and do this position. Well, you know what? I really excel here. Let me try something else. Mm-hmm. Let me try this program. Because if you have an open mind, open heart, and open will, to borrow from Theory U, Otto Scharmer's book, excellent read. Mm-hmm. Well, the more things that you're exposed to, the more things that you're going to discover, as long as you go in there not talking yourself out of it before you even give it a chance to give it a proper go. I think that's where my whole point on curiosity comes in. Try some things and be mindful to what's my reaction to this? Because you stumble upon things at certain points where like, wow, you know, this is absolutely amazing. Like, this lights me up. This inspires me. It's like, okay, well, you know, what is it about this that inspires you? And how can you create this for other people? For me, I mean, we went very different directions. But for me as a presenter, I always found that the things that excited me were the most rewarding when I shared that with other people. And I thought, wow, that's useful. And it was rewarding for them too. That was the ultimate for me.
Bobby, it's all about the great news for any of your listeners and for us in the conversation is there's so many wonderful resources around you to help speed you to the path. Like, you know, back when there was no YouTube, there wasn't hacks out there or biohacks for fitness or eating or nutrition or work day. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of these, there's so many great books and great podcasts. There's so much information. Almost too much information, right? I mean, the problem now is you gotta dissect what you need, but there's so much. So do you have to, I think one great skill to add to the top things that make for success for me was resourcefulness. I became extremely resourceful. And that's probably a product of a tragedy in my personal life, right? My mom passed away when I just turned 16, and it was a very difficult time. So resourcefulness became extremely important. How to figure that out. Because now we've got three men living in a house. When you know, mom was the cook, did everything else, the laundry, like maintained like lifestyle, like maintained how you like do everything. So I figured out real quick, I had to figure out how to make dinner. I had to I was the youngest and, you know, my brother had a job. My dad was obviously still running his business, you know, so I wanted to kind of keep the family unit dinner time together because that was important to me. So I figured out, okay, I got to remember how mom made chicken parmesan or how we did pasta for, you know, whatever. And so I became resourceful in a sense at a very granular level. And I think that at a young age planted a small seed of you can survive like in this uncomfortable environment. Cause it was uncomfortable. It was very uncomfortable actually. And I think that played part and parcel to, okay, I've had this bad experience. And not that everyone needs a negative experience to have it, but negative experiences are actually very powerful for people for future growth. I mean, and I almost even wish it on people that need it because you can explode past it. And I was one of those examples of, you know, I exploded past my potential because of that negative experience in my life, because it was so impacted on me every day. I was able to say, I just don't want to feel this way anymore. And I was searching for a way not to feel that way anymore. And I didn't, obviously I wasn't into drinking and drugs, and that wasn't going to be the path for me and hopefully for no one else. So I chose other mechanisms to fill those gaps, and resourcefulness, you know, really became my best asset.
Yeah, I want to talk about that just a little bit, because everybody listening to this right now, no matter where they are within their health, fitness, wellness journey, one thing that's guaranteed is you're going to have a setback or quote unquote failure. Something's going to go wrong despite your best efforts and best intentions. When that happens, what do you do? Like, what's the difference between people who get derailed by that versus people like you said, who that's the very best situation you can be in because that leads to something bigger?
And in an environment like this, it's so easy to sit on the sideline and say this is someone with advice. But because I've been there and through experience, I will tell you that you have to be, you have to have your mind right. And what I mean by that is you have to be able to step back and say, okay, it is true. I believe that a setback can actually be a push forward. And you have to really believe that that's the case, because it is. Because if you ask the question, what can I take away from this setback? What did I learn from this? And you hear that all the time. Learn from your mistakes. No, no, really, think about this for a second. Like, a mistake sucks. There's only bad things that you're associating with at the moment it happened. But if you were me, or if you were advising a friend or talking to a friend, what would you say about it? You would look at it, you know, in an unobjective manner. You would say, well, look at what happened here. Mm-hmm. This. Okay, so if you didn't do this, maybe this would not. You could actually find something in there, something in them that would help you create a new map. And that's important to understand that. That's how resourcefulness begins. It's taking something and making something out of it, right? I mean, MacGyver, right? You're making something out of nothing. That's what resourceful people do. He was resourceful. There's your game. I don't know if you could get Netflix MacGyver, YouTube. I don't even know. But if you haven't seen an episode, you should. But there's a great
show
example.
About a guy who could build a car out of a toothpick. It was amazing.
pretty much. But if you look at it that way, it's super important, Bobby. It is to understand that how you manage the setbacks when they happen is almost as important as how you manage the successes. And it's true. I mean, I wasn't a straight up arrow in my business with Retro Fitness or my endeavors in my own fitness or in my opening of my first gym or managing my first club. No, lots of mistakes. But, you know, I don't really talk about them that much because I don't wear them on my shoulder. I figure it out. I look in the mirror and say, okay, you screw that one up, buddy. Like, okay, don't do it again. Cause then now you really got a problem. If you keep doing that over and over again, now you really got a problem. Like you've got the compass all jacked up. You have to understand that it's going to happen. And that's not like to say the world's going to end. Things are going to happen. The cool part about it is, you know that, and you're prepared to handle it because you're resourceful. And when you do, you just look at it as part of the map, part of the stepping stone.
One of the questions that I've always trained trainers to ask, and a lot of them push back on this, it's like, oh, how could you be so negative? Is, okay, great. You know, Jane, you know, we've talked about some of your goals that you want to accomplish, which ones are most important, the impact. What's likely to go wrong? Like 3 weeks into this, a month into this, based on your past experiences, what are a couple of things that are going to come up? And what's the worst possible thing that's going to happen? People are like, well, why would you direct people towards such negativity? And one, it's not negativity. Everything's useful. It's a matter of how you frame it and what you do as a result of it. And when Jane gets to that point where she goes out, man, you know, the dessert menu comes out, the dessert cart, and she has that one moment where she reaches for something she didn't plan to reach for. She's going to attach a meaning to it. And that meaning is going to be framed by her emotional state in the moment. And then what she does after that determines whether or not she learns more about herself and moves closer towards her goal, or whether she quits the gym and then goes looking for a new one a year from now, if she ever goes back. So I think that's massively important is, you know, what could likely go wrong? Well, what does that mean? Not in the moment, but more constructively and objectively, what could it mean? What will you learn from that? And what will you do? Like, what's your plan for that? Because that will happen. So I think that's incredibly important, how you deal Yep. with setbacks and failure. And so, you know, you've worked with a lot of vendors. You've worked with investors, employees. You have a huge membership base to observe patterns of behavior. What do people who tend to fail permanently have in common?
That's a great question, Bobby. And I, you know, I'm buying myself time by saying that's a great question, Bobby, because it really takes, it takes a little bit of thought, because the response could come off almost as insulting. I think, listen, there's going to be setbacks and failures for all of us. The people that sit in the zone of setback and failure and stay there, that fatigue that can, if you look at some of the most successful people, whether it's in business or in fitness or just someone you might, maybe it's a family member of yours that you really aspire to be like, or you admire, you could probably see certain elements that are similar amongst them all. And the same goes for those that, you know, probably haven't led themselves to the top, and maybe they got halfway up and stopped and stalled, or maybe they're homeless, you know, because they just completely gave up. Mm-hmm. And there's probably a bunch of similar patterns for those as well. And I could presume, based on what I've done to continue my growth, they would be opposite of some of the things that I've done or some of the beliefs that I have. And it might just be the simple fact that they lack the belief in themselves. And that's the first thing. And not to have like a kumbaya moment, but like, it's really important to believe in you. I do every day. And there's going to be great advocates for you along the way. And there's going to be amazing opponents for you along the way. And I've had both, my friend, like, and some of those people you've named, vendors, customers, partners, have been both for me. I mean, that's the crazy part. At different points in the timeline, I've had people that were cheering for me and people that were throwing tomatoes at me. And it's just got to be able to, and throw social media into that, right? With a good amount of followers I had, you get a little bit of both.
Some of it's really brutal.
Oh my gosh, it can be. It's abusive, right? But you've got to be able to, you got to have thick skin in life and in business. And you can't take everybody so damn seriously. You know, you've got to just know what the motivation is. And once you have a good understanding of yourself and how human behavior really operates at a biological level, there's some great books about it. It helps you to understand that stuff. And you don't spend so much time in the emotional component of the garbage. You get past it. I mean, I do a lot of, listen, do I get upset? Yeah. Do I get angry? Yeah. Do I cry? Absolutely. You know, passionate people, you have all the emotions at a very, very high swinging pendulum pace. But you got to get back to the center. You got to be able to get right back on the road. Like, yeah, you have that moment. You're upset. You're mad. Maybe you go work out. You blow some steam off. Or you skipped on a workout. You pissed yourself about it. You know that next day you're going to crush it. And that's what you have to do. You go back. You don't skip another day. Just go back after it. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had incidents in business where I was like, what am I going to do now? And then I asked that question. What are you going to do now, buddy? Like, what are you going to do? And then you go take an action.
I used to be one of these people at some point that discounted the value of belief. Because I was like, well, through cognitive dissonance, if you just take enough action and you stay engaged in the process, you'll start to alter your beliefs. Behavior shapes belief. And I still believe that. However, the problem with that a lot of times is if you look at coaching from an ABC perspective, let's say A is an activating event, right? Somebody shows up late and there's a certain reaction you have. And let's take a look at C. C is the consequence of that reaction. Or let's say you miss a day. You don't go to the gym on Wednesday because there was an activating event. You got a phone call. Somebody said, hey, you know what? We're going up the street to this bar. You did that instead. And the consequence is how you feel about yourself, how you talk to yourself about why you did what you did, whether it's like, hey, you know what? I wanted to go to the bar. I'm going to go back to the gym on Thursday, whatever. Or whether you're like, oh my God, I blew it. I'm just going to start again Monday. And then Tuesday something happens and you go through that cycle. I mean, we see that in fitness all the time. But the question is, what lies between A and C? It's B, belief. What you believe about what that activating event means and your capability, that determines your reaction and that determines the consequence. Why would you engage in any road that's a very hard journey ahead of you? It's going to take a long time. If you didn't believe you were capable of getting there, that has nothing to do with lack of work ethic or lack of motivation. That very oftentimes, if I hear you right, it could just be a lack of belief, you know?
Exactly right. That's exactly what it could be.
And early in my career, I struggled with that. And, you know, I never was into the whole, well, fake it until you make it. I thought that was like kind of ridiculous. I was like, well, you know, I'm not even there. I feel like I'm being a little bit disingenuous. And then there was this whole thing around, but that's just not me. I had this story of who I was based on where I came from. One little tweak that I've learned that has helped a lot of people is, you know, I know it's not you, but who the hell is you anyway? I mean, you're not the same person when you're at home with your kids as you are when you're in an investor meeting, right? You're not the same person with your wife that you are when you're having a meeting with someone about what's going on behind the front desk at the gym. but all of those people are a part of you. Like when you're being Eric the husband, it's not like, well, Eric, I saw you yesterday in that sales meeting and you aren't the same person. You're not being true to yourself. No, it's the character of husband, the character of father, the character of business owner, and they're all you. So what I found helpful is say, okay, what if I were this character? What if I was cast in a film and in this film, this person had certain belief systems that really empowered them and it helped them to not only move progressively towards what they want, but to overcome the inevitable challenges along the way? What would those beliefs be and what would those behaviors be? Just act as if you've been cast in that role, because saying, well, I'm going to adopt these beliefs, there's a lot of stuff that gets in the way. Or saying, you know what? I am going to behave like someone who has these beliefs. Forget about what happens. I'm just going to engage in the behaviors, and I'm going to do that for a certain amount of time. It's amazing how once you get into that habit, because I mean, if you said, well, I'm a leader, you have to ask yourself, well, what is a leader and what do leaders do? So if you took on the philosophy and the behaviors and the conversations of leadership, well, what does that make you? Well, that makes you a leader, because that's the only way we have to discern a leader is by what that person does or doesn't do. If you said, well, I'm a swimmer, and then you went on like a distance cycling ride, I wouldn't say you're a bad athlete. I would just question whether or not you're a swimmer, because you're not, you can't really be found in water. Does that make sense?
Right, right. Yep.
So before we go, I think this is a really good story. You have a lot of them, but you talked about borrowing money for your business. Like when you were getting started, you went to your family, and that was a lot harder than it sounds, because you had some interesting characters. People aren't from the Northeast or New York, New Jersey. They might not relate to this. But talk about taking a little bit of a risk. Now, anyone who's like trying to lose weight or get in better shape, they're probably not going to expose themselves to this level of risk. But talk about that, Eric.
So when I had the opportunity to get involved in the first gym partnership, the requirement was, hey, you have to come up with $60,000. That's a lot of money for anyone. It was certainly a lot of money for me at, you know, 20-some-odd years old, that when I didn't really, you know, have a pot to piss in and a window to throw it out of. So I go to my father, you know, and that's where most people go for their first loan. That's a lot of business to start on, family loans. You know, mine was a little unique because, you know, I went to my father. You know, my father's now a retired, you know, NYPD guy. And, you know, he says to me, well, you got to go to Uncle Frank and Uncle Buddy. You know, both, again, God rest their souls now, but they were both also NYPD guys. And Uncle Frank and Uncle Buddy were willing to kick up $15,000 each. And my father would say, if you get the $15,000 out of Uncle Frank and the $15,000 out of Uncle Buddy, you know, I'll give you all 31 condition. You got to go to work in that gym. And that was a gym where I met you, Bobby. And you got to work there for a period of time and show me everything you learned while you were there. And that's kind of what I did. That was more of a interesting part. That reason I went in there for the job on the first day was like a lab study for me. I had to go in there and gather information because it was a successful gym. My father knew so because he drove by the parking lot every day and said, that lot's crowded every day. Why is it crowded every day? They're doing something right. Go there. That's where you're going to go work. And that's what I did. I mean, because you're going to take the most basic job you can just so you can learn it all. And that's what I did. As you know, I came in there as an hourly trainer, if you remember, when I was hired. Mm-hmm. Yep. So the deal was, and I still to this day, you know, joke about it, you know, I got my uncles, I told them about what I was trying to do and what I was going to do. My dad as well, the same thing. And we had this location. I gave them all the information. I told them what the plan was. I told them how we were doing this. And, you know, I used to say to my partner at the time, you know, when we went out and got an SBA loan, right? So we had and back then it was First Union Bank. That was pre-Wachovia, pre-Wells Fargo. So, you know, this goes back to the days of First Union. And, you know, I would say before I would write the First Union check monthly for their payment for the loan, I would write Uncle Frank and Uncle Buddy and my father's check. Mm-hmm. And I had to make sure those checks cleared first. And I would always tell you, because First Union is not going to show up on your doorstep with a baseball bat. Uncle Frank, Uncle Buddy, and my father might. So like I kind of liked how my face looked and I didn't in my head and I didn't want my and I like to walk with my legs. So I chose to write those checks in the beginning of the month. They cleared. Then we wrote the bank check. And that's how it went down. You know, all the family got paid first. Same thing with my partner. His father got his check first too. You know, and that was our mantra. But it also was a good incentive to work hard every day and stay in the gym 16 to 18 hours a day, and sometimes sleep in the tanning bed just so you didn't have to wake up too early. You could just be there in the morning and open. I mean, those were the beginning days of the glorious business ownership.
I love that story because it embodies everything you've been talking about. One, know your why in advance. Number two, start somewhere and learn along the way. So your first step wasn't, okay, well, I'm going to open up my business now. I'm going to work for somebody else. I'm going to start here and I'm going to learn enough about the business so I have some core competencies, some skills that I can leverage when it's my own business. You know, I'm going to change everything tomorrow. Well, what if you took a look at the domains of wellness like nutrition, movement, sleep, stress? Where would you start? Just start in one of those. Get really good at that, and that'll give you the confidence and the skills to leverage for all the other domains, because it doesn't matter where you are, like whether you're in the gym day three, where are you day 333? That's what's going to make the difference. And the last part of that I love is you got to have a little bit of skin in the game. Now, I'm not saying somebody should like go to their version of Uncle Frank or Buddy. It's like, okay, if you don't lose 10 pounds, I'm going to show up at your door with a baseball bat. That's not going to help your physical fitness levels. But if you're committing to, you know what, I'm going to take this group exercise class. Forget everything else. I'm going to join a gym, and I love this one class. I love this one instructor. I'm going to commit to that 2 days, 3 days a week, whatever, for the next month. Go tell somebody. Go tell someone who isn't a naysayer. It's not like, oh, really, Sue? Is this like last year when you had that New Year's resolution and by February 15th, you gained 5 pounds? No, screw those people. They suck. But someone who loves you enough to encourage you, but still hold you accountable. You know, there's still a little bit of risk because of the tightness of that social connection.
Listen, sharing your goals, it's important to share your goals. And that's one of the things I learned early on, and you as well did. Because it's nice to, I loved sharing my dreams and my goals, you know, with my wife, for instance, and now my kids too, because it also holds you a little bit accountable. You have someone else holding you accountable, which is helpful. That's why it's great to have a trainer or a gym, because someone else holds you accountable, right? The days you may not want to show up or not want to get up, someone's there to say, come on, let's do it. That's really helpful. And one thing to that point too is, and I did very often, you got to celebrate the wins along the way. And there have been periods in my career where I stopped doing that. And I found that it was so less rewarding, the ride, the journey. Everyone was talking about the journey. It's not like just a cliche or a meme on Instagram. Like it's real. Like you do have to celebrate along the way when you do something. If you get to the gym that first day, pat yourself on the back and you walk out and say, I got here. I got your sneakers on. You thought, yeah, you maybe didn't crush it. You're a little sore, but you did it. You achieved something that hundreds and thousands, millions of people haven't achieved today. And that's interesting. That's a good way to look at things. Like you make your bed in the morning and say, so you have one accomplishment right out of the day starts, right out of the gate. Do something that you can say.
Don't even get me started on this. That's one of my favorite pieces of advice.
Yeah, it's important though, Bob, because you're going to find that people that are doing things that you want to do, be, or look like are having certain habits. Just grab onto them. These are hacks. Like, steal them. I didn't reinvent the gym wheel. I did not. I just took the existing wheel and I shined it up. Like, I'm not going to reinvent health and wellness overnight. I'm just going to make it better. And that just is enough sometimes. And you celebrate that. Like, you should. Like, you should celebrate the small wins along the way, because there's going to be enough times where people could smack you in the face and tell you what you did wrong. So you should celebrate the little things you did that day, that week, that month, and let that accumulate. Let that accumulate. It'll accumulate for happiness. And you need that. You need that to continue to sustain the journey. You need that.
Because after a while, the biggest win and the biggest reward is being able to engage in that activity in the first place. And until you get there, it's kind of like DC and Ryan, where you go through four levels of self-determination. You go from being unmotivated or a motivation, then what really motivates you is the ability to achieve something in your outer world, you know, like losing that weight, or, you know, I'm going to reward myself with, some people like a smoothie, or I'm going to buy a new pair of trainers that I just love. And after a while, those external rewards, they get replaced by intrinsic rewards. Like, you know what? I just feel amazing because before everybody else was awake, I went for a run. And that sounds crazy to a lot of people. And
oh, it's so real.
The things that you're struggling with on day three are going to be the things that you're looking forward to on day 93. Just hang in there. Like if anything, just win through retention, just through endurance. I mean, if a guy like you can achieve everything that you've achieved after starting off working for someone like me, I mean, think about the level of suffering and misfortune that must have caused you on a day-to-day basis and be able to turn your life around and do this. Unbelievable.
Thank you. Yeah, and that's part of it. I enjoyed you more than you will ever know, and I did. I loved our time together. I truly did. That's what you have to find. Same joy here. In the grind. I mean, you just do. You got to find the joy in the grind. I mean, that's part of, I think, what most people's problem is. If you're going to have to do something, you may as well figure out how to enjoy that something you're doing. Because the interesting part about your story, one of the other nice things about how you win in the game is when you get to reflect on the whole time, the whole journey. You get to look back, and those times that were really hard and difficult, you get to do things like, we tell stories about it now, and they become your stories and your jokes and your lessons. But when you were going through it, you were like crying and pulling your hair out and screaming in your pillow maybe or whatever. And I've done all those things, by the way. But I could talk about them now. You know, I'm standing, I'm you know, living proof. And there's so many people that are so successful that I look up to, that I admire, that are out there. People nobody even talks about or knows about that have the same exact experience. You know, there's a lot of commonalities in those journeys for most of the people that are on them.
You know, I just want to say thank you for this, because I got a lot out of you as well. You were one of my favorite guys back at Gold's Gym. And that's why when you first opened up your place in Brick, I wanted to come down there. I wanted to help out. I wanted to be part of it, because I was like, wow, you know, to see somebody start with the company in Gold's, branch off on their own, the best thing other than seeing yourself succeed, I think, is seeing other people succeed. And I always had this question in my mind, because I remember we did an NASM workshop. You let us use your facility to come down there and teach a course. And I remember thinking, you know what? I wonder where Eric's going to go with this. I wonder where Eric's going to wind up like 10 years from now, to see where he's wound up. It's like, wow, it's amazing.
Well, thank you for caring, by the way. You know, and those were the good old days. And I tell people all the time, there's moments where I sit back and yearn for the days where I was doing the stuff that I hated. Like, you know, you're doing the daily grind. Like, there's days I'm like, wow, that was fun. You'll miss it. You will miss the things that you abhorred, you know, while you're doing those stuff. It is a little crazy, but I'm telling you, that's the truth. You find such great relationships and friendships, and hard work brings that out too. I mean, when you're grinding, it brings out a sense of your emotional side that you don't realize is happening at the time. It helps you develop, I think, too. But I do miss those days. I mean, I miss the people. I could still tell you who was sitting in the room on that seminar, because I know all their names, and I'll keep them off of this podcast. But I do know her name and his name and his name, and I can see their faces like it was yesterday. It was such an impactful time in my career.
Yeah, I think you got to capture those moments. Because there are some pivotal points where it's like, wow, you know, if I had three decisions I could have made, or 33, and if I had done anything different, the trajectory of my life would have been so grossly in contrast to where it is right now. Thank you, Eric. Yep. Really appreciate it.
Oh, Bobby, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time, and it was great to talk to you, and I hope I was able to give some benefit to all your wonderful listeners.
Absolutely. We really appreciate you. Thanks for listening to this episode of Transformation Unplugged. Our affiliate partner for this episode is Coached. That's COACHD. If you download their app or go to their website and choose to work with one of their world-class coaches, they're offering all listeners of this podcast a 20% discount. All you got to do is use the code TRANSFORMATIONUNPLUGGED. See you on the next episode.